This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Daniel Lambert from Daniel Lambert Wines in Wales. How are you, Daniel?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Last week we were talking to you about Brexit and some of the issues associated with it. This week we're going to continue on looking at some of the issues associated with costs and some of the ranging issues associated with it. Let's talk about how that you think the change in the structure is going to affect different businesses. You mentioned the famous groupage, and just for listeners, groupage is where, well, you explain it.
Groupage was a fundamental part of the wine industry, and it was the ability for producers to sell small parcels of wine, more expensive wines admittedly, but parcels of wines to the UK market so that you would have a broad range of product without a massive stock holding. Because obviously there's a big tax take for the government with wine. £2.23 of every bottle is tax plus VAT on top of that. But if you're talking about an independent wine shop or even a small chain of shops, they want to be able to put on one shipment the most they can with the most amount of ranging so that they can minimize their cost. It's pretty basic stuff and it's very easy to understand. Now, because of the way Brexit has been negotiated and because of the new paperwork, and because each declaration now incurs a fee, if you have, for example, as many people were doing, if you have one pallet of wine, which is 600 bottles, and you have four or five different producers who've come together to make that pallet happen for that particular customer, which is what a lot of people were doing, all of a sudden, each declaration costing €75 to get it out of Europe, each declaration getting it into the UK costing £50. So you've gone from £180 for a pallet all in pre-Brexit, post-Brexit, all of a sudden you could be paying up to £700-800. You can't do that. You simply cannot do that. It's not viable because you're going to be adding, you know, £6, £7, £8 to a bottle of wine. Nobody's going to do that. So as I've said many times before, the groupage system in the UK is dead in its previous format. You can't do it. And I'm already seeing lots of independents starting to talk to their agents because they know they've got to fundamentally change their ranges because they can no longer offer the service that they wanted to their customers. They've got to rethink, they've got to think outside the box and they've got to change their range. And that's, I think that's terrible that people are now not free and are now being forced to trade in a different way. Now, obviously, I'm at the coalface with this and we're looking at ways of circumventing it. And I've come up with the magic number, which is about 9 pallets, which circumvents all of the costs and allows you to run promotions and allows you to maintain the status quo of last year. But you have to be able to do the volume. There are not many independent wine shops who can ship 9 pallets of wine of one product.
Yeah. And it's not even one producer. It's every a Sauvignon Blanc and a Cabernet Sauvignon. They're different products.
Yeah, sure. So what the government probably didn't even realise that their deal has fundamentally killed off ranging for wine in the UK. And I'm sure it affects industries in other ways in a similar sort of way. But ranging is the big thing. And you know, when you've got 25,000 producers in France and another 50,000 producers in Italy and Spain and all the rest of it, how much of that ranging is going to disappear from the UK marketplace because it's just not feasible to ship it anymore?
Are you saying that you think the days of the independent merchant going to France, buying a couple of pallets of wine, different producers on the pallet?
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
That's gone. So
it's gone. It's gone forever.
But for a business like yourself, that's a massive opportunity.
Yeah, it is. It is. And so this is why we've looked at how we can play with this and how we can not manipulate it, but how we can serve better to our customers. Because at the end of the day, we're a business like any other business and we're business to business and we want to do the best for people. You know, we're here to try and sell wine and maintain ranging. And what we've discovered is that if we're smart and we put it through the right people and we consolidate as much as we can on one set of paperwork, and that takes tremendous organization, it really does. So that's how we're having to change our business. But if we are smart and we do the consolidation correctly and we get everything advised by our customers in advance, then it is possible to get this consolidation done. But it's hugely time consuming is the first thing. It takes a lot of cooperation from both all ends of the supply chain. You know, you've got to have the producers all working together. You've got to have the retailers all working together. You've got to have the agent listening to what the retailer wants and getting the right products and then feeding that all the way through the system so that you know that what you're ordering is front-loaded, so you can then pass that to the other side, get it in, and then get rid of it out to the customers. So it's really quite complicated, and it's very, very time-consuming.
So your model is changing a little bit from bringing it in quite regularly, storing it in a warehouse, and then selling it on to customers, to agreeing contracts where this independent's going to buy a pallet, this independent's going to buy a pallet, he's going to buy a pallet, and then you bring it all in, and then you distribute it straight away. So it's less about holding stock for you.
It's a bit of both. It's a little bit of both. So we're doing a little bit, as you just described, and then obviously once we've got to that tipping point, if you like, I think that's the best way of describing it. Once you've got past your tipping point, where you've negated the cost, you can then do what you want to do in terms of bringing that extra stock in. And that's the sweet bit. That's the sweet spot where you can bring in all the other bits and pieces and those customers can still buy the bits that they want to buy that are, you know, 6 bottles of this or 12 bottles of that or maybe 24 bottles of this, the really expensive stuff. That's how you get – that is, as far as I can see, doing this job for 30 years, the only way you can do it now. So you need the volume at one side, but then you can play with the sweet bit at the other side once you've got that volume. And this is where the promotional activity comes in. If you know that you can get a producer to give you a really great deal on something, so you can bring 5 pallets of that in, you're halfway there, aren't you?
Okay, so you're talking to the producer saying, look, if we buy 10 pallets because you need your magic 9, you'll give us a discount, then you can offer that through to the customer, your retailers, independent retailers, that discount to get them to buy up front. Is that the process?
But that's depending that all the customers that we've got want to buy that promotional product. That's the first thing. So you've got to pre-sell that. So you can see, from going from a position where you would hold stock and just bring it in willy-nilly as you liked, shipping literally every week, we're now shipping every quarter. We're having to pre-plan everything. We're having to do all the paperwork in advance. We're having to really think outside the box to make it work in the best way possible. So at the end of the day, the consumer, who's completely oblivious to what's going on in the background, still sees that bottle of wine on the shelf when they go in and thinks, oh, that's a good deal. Because the consumer doesn't need to know how difficult it is for the wine merchant and the agent. And it's not their problem. It's not their problem. And as an industry, we have to accept it isn't their problem.
One of the things I can understand your change in your business model. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like, I'm reasonably sanguine about Brexit, not because I support it in any way, shape or form. I don't. I thought it was a dumb thing. But businesses will have to adapt. There was a thing on TV a wee while ago about a woman who runs a shop in France selling British goods. And she's a similar sort of problem about, you know, getting the product in, all this type of thing. But to me, that just means that opens up an opportunity for someone to say, look, I'm going to set up a warehouse in France and I'm going to distribute British products from this warehouse all throughout Europe. And then, as you say, it's an internal movement once it's landed into the...
Yeah. I mean, you're playing with rules of origin, which is a real hot topic for the EU Commission. But as soon as you start getting into the rules of origin and you get it into Europe, that seems to be the big issue. I mean, we've done some export, but not to the mainland Europe. We've done some export to Jersey, which is still in the European Union in terms of the single market and customs union. So that was relatively straightforward because it's Jersey and it's not the mainland. But my understanding is that the reason the lorries are going back empty is because the paperwork that needs to be done to enter the EU, nobody has really got that quite sussed yet. I mean, Mike Batty is on record from FTL, and they're one of the guys who've been actually doing quite well in getting stuff into the UK. but they are really struggling to get stuff back out of the UK. And I know that they do, I haven't worked with them for a while, but I know that they do a lot of logistics for Scotch whiskey, for example. I know they move a lot of that sort of stuff. So I think there's a bit of give and play on both sides, absolutely. But again, if you knew this was coming down the road, and if you read the detail, you knew it was coming down the road, but you would have given business time to adapt. There was no need for the UK to exit on the 1st of January. That was just a political ambition from the Prime Minister.
The problem was the politicians were always going to take up to the last minute to negotiate.
But equally, when they did the deal on the 24th of on Christmas Eve, they could have said, do you know what? Let's be sensible about this. We've done our deal. Let's have 2 months or 3 months of transition now so that everybody can get used to what's actually required. I know there would have been political will from the EU side, because I spoke to somebody in the EU government on Monday who said that very thing. So I know that the EU would have been comfortable with that, but the UK government wasn't. And that's why the UK government is actually at fault here. Everything keeps pointing back to them.
Yeah, no, I don't think they've showered themselves in glory, anyway.
I think we can all agree on that.
Do you think, in terms of the range and prices of wines in the UK, we've sort of suggested that maybe some of the range might reduce a little bit, do you think?
Yeah, there's no question ranging will diminish. That's a given, I think. I've already highlighted the reason, the rationale behind that. I don't think I need to go over that again.
It's probably going to be the smaller producers.
It's going to be smaller producers, stuff that's more eccentric. It's going to be the stuff that is with producers who are less geared up to deal with this. Also, importers now, if they want to supply the UK, have to get a REX certificate so that they can export. And a lot of the producers are saying, well, I don't want to go and get another certificate so that the UK, so I can export from the EU. So there's already this extra burden on them, which makes it more and more difficult for EU producers, whether they be France, Italy, Spain, Germany, wherever they happen to be, to want to ship to the UK.
Do you blame the EU rules and regulations, or do you blame the UK government for the rules and regulations that have been implemented?
Which rules and regulations are we talking about?
Well, that's what I mean. I'm trying to get a more of a holistic point of view. Do you think that the reduction in range and the increase in potential increase in costs of wines is irrespective of who decide on Brexit, are the rules coming from the EU that's causing the...
Well, no, we're a free country now, aren't we? So the UK...
I know, but you've got internal documents and...
Yeah, you have, yeah. Okay, so let's be clear on this. The EU's systems for moving stock around the EU is all electronic. It's very easy to use. It's very simple to use. It was created only 10, 15 years ago, so it's pretty up to date. And you can move stuff with great simplicity. The EX1 document to exit the EU is also an electronic document. So when people talk about paperwork, in the EU we're talking about documentation that's electronic. Mm-hmm. And the EU does not want to introduce physical paper documents. The difference is, in the UK, we are talking paper documents, literally paper documents. The C88, you create it on a computer, sure, and you can email it, but you have to have the physical paper document when you arrive to show the customs guy. It has to be a paper one. So we're going back 30 years straight away with that piece of loveliness. In terms of the fact that the documentation and the systems were created in 1988, should explain quite clearly how our systems are not adequate.
Is the government proposing to replace the chief system or the...
So CDS is the replacement, which has been under development since 2011. That's when the government decided back in 2011, look, chief is not fit for purpose anymore with what it was doing then. This is 5 years before the referendum now. Okay, so this is not about Brexit at all now. The government of its own back decided that chief needed to be replaced in 2011. And it said, we're going to introduce a new system. So they thought about how they could introduce a system that would integrate into the current EMCS system, because what they wanted to do, and rightly so, they wanted to integrate deep sea into the UK with EMCS at the time, the European system, and have the two as one. And that makes perfect sense. That's exactly what you would want them to do. And that was called CDS, the Custom Declaration System, it was going to be called, or is called. Now, when the referendum happened, they went to the European Union and said, well, look, we've got Chief. That's all we've got because CDS still isn't ready. Can we use Chief? And Chief was so old and so antiquated that the two systems were not compatible. So this is why, at this point, any gunner would have taken a step back and said, hang on, right, this is really quite important that we get Chief replaced before we do the Brexit thing. Because if we're going to have Brexit, we need to have a robust importing system that works and is fit for purpose. So again, a huge failure on the government's part, whether you're pro or leave, that you should have as a nation in the G8, you should have an importing and export system that is fit for purpose.
So the new system they're developing, do you call it the CDS?
CDS.
CDS. Given that we don't have access to the European system anymore, does that mean that the CDS needs to be rewritten, or is it what they've got will be fine?
The CDS has been under development, as I say, since 2011. They tried to roll it out in 2017, and they suddenly realised that it just didn't work and they needed a lot more work on it. This is 2017. If you go onto Wikipedia and you actually look up Chief, and I suggest everyone should do this, it's quite entertaining. If you go to Wikipedia and look up the Chief system we currently use, Wikipedia has it as defunct from 2019 onwards, which is just beautiful, because that's when CDS was supposed to come in, but it's still not coming in. They're now trialing it for the Northern Ireland protocols that are going on there, which will be the only bit of the UK that can use it, and that's because Northern Ireland is in the single market, so it's compatible with EMCS. So that's why they're using it there. They want to see if it works there. But it's not going to be rolled out to the rest of the UK, probably for another four or five years. I don't know. You'd have to ask government. But, yeah, I mean, it's a major failure on the government's part to have not had that sorted. Major failure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, that all makes sense, I think. Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but, I mean, I can see what's going on there. All right, Daniel. I think I'm going to wrap it up there.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, no problem.